It's several hours into a long night of music at The Rapids, a restaurant in Huntington, Massachusetts. A contestant takes the stage in the Connecticut River Watershed Council's songwriting contest.
New England's longest waterway.
While there's not a single Grammy winner in the group, a couple of the judges have connections to Hollywood, and one is the grandson of the great 20th century radio star, Eddie Cantor. Three singers will be selected tonight to compete in the finals later this month. But why are council staff doing the work of American Idol talent scouts? The council's Pat LaMountain says she's trying to get a message out without causing people's eyes to glaze over.
We do all the things about dams, all the permits, or just testing the waters for bacteria. I mean, they don't necessarily not want to know. They don't want to hear it in the way that we usually can present it.
So tonight, they're hearing it in a different way. The theme for the contest is living along the river. And one writer started at the river's headwaters in New Hampshire, where the Connecticut starts as a series of lakes.
Dragging on the Perry Stream at Connecticut Lakes with a Belgian team.
Fourth grade teacher John Michael Field from Wilbraham, Massachusetts, wrote about logging on the river in the late 1800s.
The frozen slopes, snubbing the horses with an icy rope. He moved more spruce than a man could dream. He never lost a sled. He was the best.
Vermont did once have a massive red spruce forest. UMass biologist Ed Klikowski says when it was chopped down, the Connecticut turned into a river of wood.
That cutting began in about 1870, and they would drive these logs all the way down to sawmills in Northampton and in Holyoke. It's about a 300-mile drive.
Using the Connecticut to send logs downstream didn't last long, but there's always been farming. And yet, Klikowski says back then, the farmers didn't always treat the river well.
The farmers along the Connecticut River used the Connecticut as a garbage dump. They would bring their horses full of whatever refuse they had, and then dump it off the banks. In addition to the farmers dumping garbage, every industry along the Connecticut River was venting its spore, so to speak, into the waters. And so, before the Clean Water Act, the river was really pretty foul.
Federal clean water legislation in the 1960s and 70s gave the Connecticut a chance to renew.
What I find so wonderful about this river is that you can be within a quarter mile of some of the most densely populated areas. And when you're out in the middle of this river, you hardly know it.
Ecologist Elizabeth Farnsworth of the New England Wildflower Society is standing on the banks of the Connecticut in Northfield, Massachusetts. She's kayaked the entire length of the river and has seen bald eagles soar over Hartford. But she says the river offers something more than access to nature.
Look at it now. It's clear. It's clean. You wouldn't drink out of it necessarily, but it has really recovered in a remarkable way. So when I get on this river and think about how resilient the system is, it really gives me hope.
Hope, but not illusion. She and other river stewards know it will take more than a song to protect the Connecticut. For WNYC, I'm Jill Kaufman.